Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Good afternoon, everyone. Okay, we have... Last time I started to explain the Karaniya Metta Sutta, and this is extremely popular sutta in the Theravada Buddhist world. You might say that it's almost, you call this the signature piece, in that it is the, on any ceremonial occasion, if there's time to recite only one sutta, then this is the sutta that will be selected to be recited. And this sutta deals with the development of metta, not in a systematic way, in that it doesn't contain formal detailed instructions, but it's done, you might call it, in a lyrical way. Almost, well, it is a poem. So it deals with the development of loving kindness in a poetic way. But still, as I said last time, the sutta unfolds according to the typical pattern of the Buddha's path, according to the three basic divisions of the Buddha's teaching, the three of the Buddha's practice, that is the division of sila, that is ethical discipline, moral discipline, samadhi, the training in meditative concentration, and then at the very end, there will be just a very light reference to the development of panya, wisdom. And so last time we explained the section on the development of sila, moral discipline, which is, according to the outline here, includes development of such qualities as being honest, upright, easy to speak to, gentle, humble, contented, not being impudent, not being greedy, and not doing anything that would incur reproach from others. Observing the precepts very carefully, very scrupulously, so that one makes oneself a model of right conduct. Then on the base, we call all of these factors of moral discipline the prerequisites to the practice of metta, since what they do is to prepare the mind for the focused and concentrated development of loving kindness. They help to make the mind soft, gentle, open, responsive to the feelings of others, and they soften the mind so that it eliminates all of the qualities that lead to mental stiffness, arrogance, ill will, and that are opposed and obstructive to the development of loving kindness. Then the development of loving kindness begins with the phrase expressed in the sutta, Sukhino va kemino hantu, sabbe sata bhavantu sukhitata. May all beings be well, may they all be safe or secure, may all beings be happy. And following the explanation of the commentary, this should be understood to mean, first, may they all be well in body, enjoying physical health. Then may they all be free from harm and danger. And then lastly, May they all be happy in mind. So one begins with the general statement, the general wish for the welfare and happiness of all beings. And then one takes particular classes of beings, distinguished according to different groups that are listed here in the outline. And I should say that the method given in this sutta is not the most elementary method for developing loving kindness. In the suttas themselves, in the Nikayas, probably in the Chinese Agamas too, one doesn't find the most elementary method as taught in the Buddhist tradition. The most elementary method that has come down in the Theravada tradition, according to the method of the commentaries, is to take people and to sort them out into the different groups, sometimes four, sometimes five groups, oneself, then a dear and respected person, then a very close person, then a person who is like an ordinary friend, then a neutral person, then a hostile person. And one works with each person, first oneself, directing the thought of loving kindness towards oneself, using oneself as the standard, as the criterion. Because in order to generate a wish for the well-being and happiness of others, first one has to get some feeling of what it means to wish for the welfare and happiness of a person, of a living being. And to do that, one has to see that the desire for one's, for welfare, for well-being and happiness is the fundamental root of one's own being, of one's own existence. And so one generates the thought towards oneself, may I be well, may I be safe and secure, may I be happy. Doing this over and over, not just as a mechanical repetition, but feeling that, or generating that feeling, that real emotion of wishing for one's own well-being, one's own safety, one's own happiness, till one is actually truly generating that wish from the depths of one's heart. Then one takes the respected, the dear and respected person, generates that wish towards this person. Then one takes a very close person, generates that wish towards a very close person. Then the ordinary friend generates that wish towards the friend. Then one takes the neutral person, takes a little more work, well, sometimes a lot more work with the neutral person. Somebody that one sees regularly, could be a person that works in the shop where you buy your things. Could be if you see the mailman who delivers your mail, somebody who comes maybe to work in your house from time to time, a person that works in your office but that you don't have any real connection with. But you just take this person and try to generate the thought, the feeling of loving kindness towards that person. May that person be well in body, free from all illness. May that person be safe and secure. May that person be happy, peaceful in mind. Doing this over and over until one can really feel a strong, sincere wish for the well-being and happiness of that person. Then, when one succeeds with the neutral person, then at the very end, one brings in, we might call the hostile person, the so-called enemy. And if one has trouble bringing in the enemy, then one leaves the enemy aside. One doesn't try to bring that person in at once, but one can work just with the other groups until one really succeeds in building up a strong generation of loving kindness towards the people in all of these groups, then one very cautiously can bring the so-called enemy back, or hostile person, back into the circle and try to develop the loving kindness towards that person. And one works gradually with that person until one succeeds in developing loving kindness towards that person. Then, when one succeeds with the hostile person, then one has to take all the people together, oneself, dear person, close friends, neutral people, person, the hostile person, and generate the loving kindness towards them equally, till one feels no discrimination or distinction between any of them. And when one does this, that is called the breaking down of the barriers, so that the loving kindness becomes radiated, is generated equally towards all of these persons. And when one does this, then one could start generating the loving kindness towards the beings in wider classes. According to the method of the Metta Sutta, then one starts taking the beings in these different classes, the frail and the strong, the long, middle-sized and short, large, middle-sized and small, and so on, seen and unseen, those dwelling far, those dwelling near, those that have come to be and those about to come to be, and radiating to all of them the wish, may all beings be happy. Okay, now we come to the section of the sutta that we didn't cover yet. Oh, I didn't bring the book. I knew, I felt an empty hand. Okay. Okay, I recite the Pali, then I'll read the translation. Na paro parang nikubeta Nati manye takata chinang kanchi Pyaro sana patika sanya Nanya manya sadukamicheya. Okay, now in the previous sections, the Buddha is explaining loving kindness as the wish for the well-being and happiness of other beings. But an important part of human existence, or of sentient existence in general, is the relations between other beings. Relations between people, relations between living beings. And an unfortunate part of those relations is that they are so often involved with conflict, disharmony, violence, destruction. And so in this part of the sutta, or in this verse, one is now radiating the wish for harmony and peace among beings. So to read the translation of the text, one is now generating the wish, the paro parang nikubeta, let none deceive another. Let no one practice any kind of deception, cheating, against anyone else. Nati manyeta katachinang kanchi. Let no one despise anyone else, another person whatsoever, in any place. I'm reading from the book now on page 16. Vyarosana patigasanya nanyamanyasa dukamicheya. Let him not wish any harm to another out of anger or ill will. Okay, so with this, one is now giving a new tone to the practice of loving kindness, giving it, you might call, a broader compass, expanding its range from its application just to each individual's own wish for their well-being and happiness, now extending it so that it now applies to the relations between beings. One is now wishing that the relations between beings will be marked by honesty rather than deception and cheating, by honesty and openness, that it will be marked not by contempt, but by respect for one another. And one wishes that there will be no ill will between beings, and that none will wish any harm or suffering for another, but instead one wishes that beings will promote each other's happiness. Okay, and with this verse, we complete what I would call the basic meditative development of loving kindness. And a principle, I have to say, a principle that underlies this whole meditative development of loving kindness is that the mind can be changed and transformed through the repeated development of the thought process in a particular direction, and using the thought process to awaken and arouse a state of mind that corresponds to that thought formation. So initially, at the very beginning, when one starts the development of loving kindness, one might not really feel strong loving kindness. And so if somebody starts this practice and at first they don't succeed very much, they might get disillusioned and disenchanted and think, I just can't do it. I don't have the aptitude for it. I'm just not naturally a loving person. And so it's just hopeless. I just can't do it. Or maybe the instructions are wrong. Maybe I'm just don't have the right instructions. The instructions don't click with me. Maybe I need some other set of instructions. But a basic point in the whole system of the Buddhist mind development is that we don't begin with this natural aptitude for particular types of meditation. We begin with rather shapeless, defective minds, and we use the technique of meditation as a way of giving shape and form to the mind in the direction indicated by this, by the particular topic or subject of meditation. So in the case of the loving kindness meditation, we use the wish, the thought of wishing for the welfare and happiness of sentient beings. We begin, as I explained this before, taking our own wish for our own welfare and happiness. Then we consider that people in these particular classes also wish for their welfare and happiness, reflecting in this way and using the thought May they be well, free from harm and danger. May they be happy. We use that as a tool for stirring up in our own mind, generate the thought, the real feeling of loving kindness. We use it as, we might call it, a fan for awakening, for arousing the fires of loving kindness in our own heart. And by working at it repeatedly, eventually the coals or charcoals of loving kindness will start to catch flame, and then the flame will grow bigger and bigger until they start to burn quite intensely, until it becomes not just a generating of loving kindness, but it becomes a radiation of loving kindness. Now, once the loving kindness takes hold and one is able to generate the loving kindness towards the beings in all the different classes, then one has to develop the loving kindness still further through what I call the intensification and expansion of loving kindness. And that is what is dealt with in the next verses. Okay, now I'll recite the Pali. And here we have the very beautiful simile verse.
Mataya taniyam putang payusa eka putang anurakhe evam pisabhutesu manasang bhavaye aparimanam.
Okay, the translation. Just as a mother would protect her only child at the risk of her own life, even so, let him cultivate a boundless heart towards all beings. Okay, this gives us a useful device or suggestion on how to intensify the feeling or emotion of loving kindness. Here the text uses the simile of the way a mother would feel towards her only child, that she loves the child so much that she would be willing, ready, even to sacrifice her own life to protect her only child, to save the life of her only child. And so, towards all living beings, one should develop a mind as if those beings are one's only child. One should develop that mind measurelessly, aparimanam, without any restrictions, any limitations, any boundaries. Towards every being, one should be able to develop the thought, this being is my only child. I'm ready to protect that being, even with my own life. And one could, if one really believes strongly in the Buddha's teaching of rebirth, then one knows the Buddha says that in this beginningless samsara, at one point or another, every being must have been one's own child. It's very difficult to find a being who at one point or another has not been one's own son or one's own daughter. So one could think even the person that one regards as hostile towards oneself, as one's enemy, now one could think, in a previous life, I was this person's mother. If you're a woman, if you're a man, I was this person's father. And one could think, I have to love this person now, just as if in this present life I was that person's mother, I was that person's father. Sometimes, for some people, this doesn't work, this method. Like sometimes there are people who have difficulties in their relations with their parents, so it's difficult for them to develop the mind of a mother towards other beings. In February, when I stayed for a week in the Four Ansa in Chinatown, when I was taking treatment, there was one young woman who was connected with that temple. She was studying law she was from China, mainland China. She was studying in the NYU Law School. Very intelligent, very capable woman. And she told me that she had been applying for positions with law firms, but whenever she goes for interviews, she gets tense and nervous. And so when she goes into the interview, she tenses up and she becomes very quiet in the interview, and she doesn't really know how to handle herself in the interview. And for that reason, she doesn't succeed in the interview, and she wasn't able to succeed in getting the jobs that she applied for. And she wanted to know if I could give her any advice. So I was thinking, and so I thought of this verse from the Metta Sutta. So I said, well, one method that I could suggest to you is, before you go into the interview, even just now you can start training, think of yourself as being the mother, and the person who's giving the interview you think as being, if it's a man, your son, your daughter, and try to just go into the room and think that you're meeting your long-lost son, your long-lost daughter. And see if how that works for you. But then she told me that she didn't have a good relationship with her mother. That her mother was always making very stern demands on her. And she herself said that in this life she didn't really want to have children. And so I was stumped. But from speaking to her previously, I knew that she had a very close relationship to her spiritual master, who was the monk who founded the Pho An temple, who had passed away 2 years ago. His name was Master Fa Yun Fa Shi. And so then I thought of a different way to handle this. I told her, in that case, make your mind the mind of your master. And when you go in for the interview, you think that you are your master and that the people who are conducting the interview are your disciples. That you are coming to them. Your master was very compassionate. So you come to them with the very compassionate mind of your master and see how it goes. And then she had an interview a couple of days later, and so I saw her on the last day that I was at the temple, and she told me that the interview went very well and that she had a very good rapport with the people who conducted the interview, and that she didn't get the job because her specialization in law was a little different from what they wanted for that position, but they were interested in her and they took her name and contacts, and if they had some opening in the position, that she was specializing in, they wanted to get back in touch with her. Okay, so if the mother line doesn't work, then find another line that will work. But something that makes you feel some, that enables you to arouse some feeling of cherishing, feeling of very close concern for the beings towards whom one is developing loving kindness. But don't do it just as an expedient means of getting some advantage or benefit for oneself. It's not a method for winning friends and influencing people and getting up in the world of corporate capitalism or whatever. Okay, so this verse, the way I see it, its purpose is to give a method for intensifying metta, loving kindness, for enabling one to generate stronger and stronger metta by arousing in one's mind the feeling that the beings towards whom one is generating metta are one's own children, generating such a strong metta towards all beings, a measureless mind towards all beings. The next verse takes us towards what is called the expansion of metta. One is now developing directional expansion, the ability to extend metta to beings in all directions. But when I recite, I like to go back to the previous verse and recite that again in Pali and then slide into the next verse, because the transition from one to the other, the phonetic transition is very nice. And there's something I want you to listen for in the transition, and I'll quiz you on it when I stop the recitation. You can see it also in the text of the verse.
Mata yata niyamput tang ayusa ekaputtang anurakhe evam bisababhutesu manasang bhavaye aparimanang Metan ca sabbalokasmin manasang bhavaye aparimanang utang ato ca tiriyanca asambhadang Averang Asapattang.
Okay, what is special in the transition from between the two verses? It's from the verse marked 4.1 to 4.2 in the Pali text. Somebody venture a guess. It's concerned with the words, with the wording.
The wording?
Yeah.
The wording now is transition to the expansion.
That is true, but there's something particular in the wording. It's not that, no.
Metta.
Yeah. Yeah. And what about the word metta?
Metta.
Yeah. You said the word metta.
Metta. Yeah.
Yeah.
related to metta?
This is the word metta. Yeah, that's just because it's coming in the accusative case. It's the word metta. Okay, he has it right. And the reason why it's special is that this is the only, it's called the Metta Sutta, and this is the only place in the whole sutta where the word metta occurs. So Ken gets the trophy. Okay. So now, coming to the text. Okay. Let his thoughts of boundless love pervade the whole world, above, below, and across, without any obstruction, without any hatred, without any enmity. Okay, at this point, after one has now intensified metta by developing it towards living beings very, very strongly, as though a mother is protecting her own child, one now takes the different directions. Though the text, for because of the meter, it fits it in above, below, and across. But one usually begins by taking the horizontal directions, taking the east, and one takes all living beings in the east going boundlessly out in the east. One could imagine all beings in this direction, and one radiates the loving kindness out towards all beings in this direction, wishing all beings in the east to be well, free from harm and danger, and to be happy. Then one takes all beings in the southern direction, wishing them all to be well and happy. Then in the western direction, the northern direction, till one has now covered all the horizontal directions. If one wants to be more precise, one could break the horizontal directions down into the eight directions, bringing in the what are called the intermediate directions, north, northeast, east, and so on. But at first it's easier to use just the primary directions. Then one takes all beings above, all beings in the sky going upwards, and below, all beings in the earth, below the earth. Until one could extend loving kindness towards all beings in all directions boundlessly without any obstruction. Another way to extend loving kindness, after one does directional radiation in this way, one then takes the planes of existence. One extends loving kindness towards beings in all the different continents. Actually, I find this way easier than doing the directional radiation. One takes all human beings in the main continents. First, since we're in North America, we take all beings in North America, then South America, Europe, Africa, Asia is big, so you could even break it down into Western Asia, Southern Asia, East Asia, Australia, and then cover the entire earth, all human beings on the earth, radiating loving kindness towards all human beings on the earth. And consider that to be the equivalent of the horizontal radiation. Then going above or upwards, one takes the realms that are higher than the human realm, extending loving kindness to all of the beings in the deva realms, all the devas. And then taking the beings lower than the human realm, first one begins with the animals, which are dwelling in the same physical plane as we are, and wishing that all the animals in our world be well, happy, free from harm and danger. Then one can take the beings in the lower realms, the tormented spirits, the afflicted spirits, and then the hell realms. And in this way, one is bringing in beings in all of the five gatis, the five basic realms of existence. And then when one takes in all five realms of existence, finally one stops making any distinction between realms, and one just radiates the loving kindness towards all beings without distinctions. Okay, the next verse is going to describe how one practices this loving kindness as a Brahma-vihara, a divine abode, how one maintains it continuously.
Titaṃ caraṃ nisino va sayano va yavatasa vigatamito etaṃ satiṃ atiteya brahma metaṃ viharaṃ itamahu.
A reading from the book. Whether he stands, walks, sits, or lies down, as long as he is awake, he should develop this mindfulness. The text uses the word etaṃ satiṃ. It's a mindfulness. So it's the mindfulness of metta, of loving kindness. And then it says, this, they say, is, our translation says, is the noblest living here. But the actual Pali is Brahma metaṃ viharaṃ idamahu. So we have etaṃ means this, but the actual expression is Brahma viharaṃ. This is the abode or dwelling place of Brahma, the divinity, the divine one, here. So in Indian belief, there was the supreme god named Brahma, and people believed that he dwelt in the high heavens. But the Buddha says that the real divine dwelling place is not up in the high heavens, but it is the dwelling in loving kindness. But not simply just dwelling in loving kindness from time to time, but it is when one can maintain this mind of loving kindness continuously, whether standing, walking, sitting, even lying down, as long as one hasn't fallen asleep, one is continuously generating that, mindfully generating that wish for the welfare and happiness of all beings. And as one generates that wish continuously, this loving kindness meditation leads to the state of very deep samadhi, the state of jhana, of meditative absorption. And it's said that through the practice of loving-kindness meditation, one could reach up to the third absorption, the third jhana. And so those who practice loving-kindness meditation and reach the very deep samadhi, the jhana samadhis, when they pass away, if they don't go further, can be reborn in high realms of existence, even beyond our own human realm, beyond the heavens of the sensual heavens. They are reborn in the Brahma world, very, very in these unimaginably sublime states of existence, living there for many, many thousands and thousands of years, experiencing sublime bliss. But eventually they have to pass away and take a rebirth elsewhere. And so for this reason, for Buddhism to develop just loving kindness without wisdom is not considered satisfactory. What one needs is loving kindness together with wisdom. And it is this that leads to liberation. And so in the last verse, we have the element of wisdom introduced very, very subtly and delicately. And here the Buddha will describe the qualities first of the stream enterer, and then he will bring the teaching, leading it from the state of the stream enterer to the attainment of the third path and fruit, the stage of the non-returner.
Diting cha anupagama silava dasanena sampanno kame suvinaya gedam nahi jatu kapaseyang punareti.
Okay, taking the translation from the book, not falling into wrong views, being virtuous and endowed with insight or endowed with vision, by discarding attachment to sense desires, or I have abandoning greed for sensual pleasures. Oh, I disagree. He says, never again is he reborn. But I translate literally in my sheet. One does not take rebirth in a womb. Or even more literally, never again does one come to the bed of the womb. Okay, now to turn loving kindness towards wisdom. What is done? The meditator who can develop jhana based on loving kindness then enters into jhana through loving kindness, stabilizes the jhana, stabilizes the loving-kindness jhana, then emerges from that jhana. Then emerging from the jhana, he looks back and examines the jhana in which he was in. that jhana is that state of meditative absorption. And he sees and investigates, what was that jhanic experience? It was so blissful, so peaceful, that if one doesn't examine it, one becomes attached to it and interprets it in many ways, maybe as a divine experience. But now examining it, one sees that it is basically an experience of mind. And within that experience, what was present? There was a feeling, a pleasant feeling. There was a perception. There were a whole bundle of mental formations, states of volition, volitional formations, including amongst them that emotion of loving kindness. There was the attention to the object of loving kindness. There was consciousness, the awareness of the object. In other words, there were these four mental aggregates occurring based on this physical body, the aggregate of form. The four mental aggregates occurring based upon, especially, what is called in the Pali text, the heart base, which is just a metaphorical expression for the aspect of physical form that serves as the base for the occurrence of mental phenomena. And so one sees that that experience of loving kindness, jhana, is a constituent phenomena made up of the five aggregates. This experience is impermanent. It is arisen through conditions. It ceases with the cessation of its conditions. Because it's impermanent, it's not really ultimate or satisfactory. It's dukkha. And because it's impermanent, not ultimate, not truly worth clinging to, it's not myself, not I. Anicca, dukkha, anatta. Impermanent, unsatisfactory, not self. He investigates, examines that experience ever more deeply in terms of these three characteristics until, as the wisdom reaches maturity, there comes the breakthrough to the vision, the insight into the unconditioned, Nibbana. With that breakthrough to the unconditioned, the three fetters are broken of holding to wrong views, doubt about the Buddha and his teaching, and clinging to wrong view, to rules and observances. So one now becomes a stream enterer. One is now observing very scrupulously the five precepts, and one possesses the impeccable right view of a true noble disciple of the Buddha. As one practices further, develops one's wisdom further, eventually one can go on using the loving kindness meditation as the basis for one's samadhi, developing the wisdom based upon that samadhi. At a certain point, one abandons the greed or the attachment to sensual pleasures. And along with the abandoning of greed for sensual pleasures, one abandons ill will, anger, hatred. That is the cutting off of the five lower fetters. And with that, one no longer comes back to the sensual realm of existence, but one is bound for rebirth only in the pure abodes, to be spontaneously reborn as a non-returner to reach final liberation there. And that is as far as one goes according to the Metta Sutta. Why the sutta doesn't take the teaching as far as the final liberation, arhatship, that I don't know. But if one takes the last two lines very literally, it has to be taken as non-returner and not arhatship. Okay, that will be the end of the discourse. I thank you for your attention, and may the blessings of the Triple Gem be with you all. If there are any questions, then you could please feel welcome to ask.
Bhante, would you please explain the distinction between the two kinds of person, between a dear and respected person and a close person? And
the close person? The close person. The close, very close person. Yeah, a dear and respected person. You see, I think this was devised because one doesn't want to begin with a very close person, because if one does, then it's likely that one's natural feeling of affection for a very close person will come in disguised as loving kindness. So they recommend, they call a respected person, because there's a little more distance between that you and that person. And so one is developing loving kindness to that person, it gives more opportunity, I think, for loving kindness to appear in its true colors, not for natural affection to appear in the disguise of loving kindness. So I think they generally recommend, say, for the respected person, somebody like a teacher, but for a close person, could be somebody like a parent or a very close friend, brother and sister, if one has a very, very close brother and sister. They say one shouldn't take a husband or wife because then it's possible that sensual feelings will arise in the disguise of loving kindness.
Can we take our parents as dear and respected person?
I would think so.
So teacher, parents?
Yeah.
So close person can be our friend?
I would say so, yeah.
That person has to be a living person?
Oh, that's a good question. Does the person have to be a living person? Yes, it has to be a living person. Let me say, for the meditation practice, the person should be a living person, because it's hard to consistently develop the meditation of loving kindness towards a person who's passed away. However, what is done, like, if a person has recently passed away, one can do like a short, one wants to commemorate the person who's passed away in some way. Sometimes one does an act of merit on their behalf, and one wants to share the merits with them, and so one will then think of them with loving kindness and wish that if one does some act of merit on their behalf, one will wish that they will participate in the act of merit and think of them with loving kindness. And that is all right. But for it to be the actual meditative development, it should be a living person. To develop loving kindness as a Buddha? No, it won't work.
He has enough, right?
Excuse me?
He has enough already.
Yeah, he's passed away. And also towards the Buddha, what will arise will be feelings of devotion, I think, will arise in the disguise of loving kindness. Because one is wishing for welfare and happiness. If a person has passed away, one can't wish for their well-being because they're not here anymore. One can't wish for their well-being as the person you've known them, because they're not in that form anymore in which you've known them. And also you can't wish for their happiness in that form anymore in which you've known them. All you can do is wish that in their new form of existence, that they're well and happy in their new form of existence. But Buddha has gone to Nirvana.
Next question. That person has to be the same sex, like a female, take a female, and male takes a male.
In the Pali commentaries, it said that the person should be of the same sex. In my view, this is could be a little too limiting. What I would say is that the person should be somebody that one doesn't have a what I would call a male-female love relationship with. Otherwise, the feelings of that relationship could enter in the guise of loving-kindness.
I always have a problem with this kind of mental exercise because I feel it's very similar to having a fantasy or trying to self-hypnotize. I cannot be convinced that this is not an exercise of hypnotism.
Okay, her question or statement is that she feels that this is for the recording, she feels that this practice seems like an exercise in self-hypnotism, or what was the first expression you?
Having a fantasy.
Having a fantasy or self-hypnotism. Let us say at the beginning it can be somewhat mechanical. And if it remains merely mechanical, then one is going about it wrongly. The purpose of using the formula is, I call it a device or expedient means for arousing or generating in the mind the state of mind that corresponds to the formula. And so it's not just repeating a formula mechanically. May my teacher be well, happy, peaceful, free from harm and suffering. May my parents be well, happy, peaceful, free from harm and suffering, free from harm and suffering, free from harm and suffering. No, it's not like that. But one actually really has to understand the meaning and work with the formula, actually think of the people and try to use that formula use it in a very gentle, very soft, very subtle way to bring into being bhavaye. That's really the meaning of the word bhavaye in this sutta. To bring into being that state of mind expressed by the formula. And as one does so, little by little, 一点一点, that state of mind will come into being. And then as it comes into being, little by little, then it starts gathering momentum until once one becomes skilled with the formula, then the formula drops away, can drop away. One just uses it at the beginning just to bring up the state of mind, then the mind can just carry on by its own momentum. So they say. Is that David's hand?
I kind of feel when I practice this that I'm actually, besides thinking about the being, I'm actually generating loving energy towards the person.
Yeah.
So that's one side of it. Is that what this practice really is? Or, rather than just like thinking about the person, I'm actually taking spiritual energy and sending it out into whatever is in the cosmos that connects all of us. I feel that I'm sending out a positive type of energy.
I say definitely when it's generating, the expression loving energy is a very good expression. That's what one is generating in the mind. When the formula starts, when the practice starts to succeed, what one feels in the mind is loving energy being generated. Whether that loving energy is actually in some way working at some subtle level to actually reach out and affect the other person, that I don't know. There might be like levels, in fact, this is my hypothesis, that there are deep levels of connectedness by which those thoughts, loving thoughts, connect with other beings, the ones to which they are, the thoughts are generated. So there's no basis for that in the canonical texts. So working just on the basis of canonical texts, I can't say that this is justified. But it's just my supposition that there are such connections. But whether that is so or not, but when the practice takes off, so to say, one feels the loving energy being generated in the mind. Then one sees it's not just self-hypnosis or a mechanical exercise.
I think I can end it.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead, yeah, please.
Because the theory of practicing loving kindness is just like the theory how anger arises. One of the causes that anger arises is our unwise attention. For example, in the Dhammapada, in the very beginning, the chapter of the pears,
yeah.
It says, suppose you think this way, he beats me, he robs me, he abuses me,
yeah.
Then anger arises. But suppose we do not think this way, then anger does not.
Yeah.
But what the meaning is this, you may think this person doing something wrong towards me, and then you have this feeling, and then it's a kind of this feeling, the ill will, anger, hostile reaction towards that person. And then an attitude will be developed in our character. And then we will be a person of there are kinds of persons, like a person who easy to get angry.
Mm.
And this is the reason why it becomes like this. And in Majjhima Nikaya, Sutta number 10, two kinds of thoughts. The Buddha says, if one thinks, tends to think of ill will, and then that person will the mind will have a tendency toward that.
Yeah, 19, I think. How do you mean 19? The sutta on the two types of thoughts?
Yeah.
Yeah, 19.
Yeah. So the theory is just like this.
Yeah.
So, but if we practice this,
yeah.
Whenever you find then we are have a wrong type of attention, then you can correct to other type of attention. But then in this way, so this is the wise attention, to keep our mind away from the wrong type of attention. Mm-hmm. And then it will become a very positive attitude
to
other beings.
Yeah. Okay, you're wrong.
If that's the answer, then my question is this. I've joined Christian fellowship before when I was younger, and it was a very loving fellowship. So there's a group of people who want to teach us how to share the grace of God with everyone. So it's a very, very loving environment. And I feel that there is a group hypnotism going on because you sort of feel brainwashed. And it's a very good cult because always teach us to do good things. And since that, I feel that the association is with God, and Christian God, in my mind, is similar to Brahma, then will they also get to the divine abode? And then if at that point, for some reason, they have good karma in the past, and wisdom arrives, will they be able to also break through and gain wisdom? Well, that, what I'm saying is that, well, that kind of mental exercise with the Christian group builds a foundation of metta, and then from that foundation we can build the wisdom of non-self. Is it possible?
Mm. Okay, just the question is, maybe I'll rephrase it a little bit. Is it possible by following some other spiritual discipline other than Buddhism to develop the Brahma Viharas of loving kindness? And get rebirth in the divine abodes, the divine realms? And is it possible also by following other spiritual disciplines to develop the divine abode jhanas and then develop the wisdom of non-self and get the stages of enlightenment? It seems to me theoretically that one could have the development of loving outside Buddhist, the Buddhist dispensation, one could have the practice of love of the divine abodes, loving kindness, compassion, altruistic joy, to this, even to the stages of jhana. In fact, in the suttas, the Buddha speaks about periods in the past when he was an ascetic, following, you know, non-Buddhist religions, and he says that he had practiced the divine abodes and then was reborn in the Brahma worlds. And so the Buddhist texts seem to take it as sort of a basic principle that the divine abodes are not something peculiar and special to the Buddha's dispensation, or to the Buddha's teaching. And so I would say, for those Christian groups, if they really practice loving kindness in a meditative way and train themselves very systematically in the development of loving kindness without too much dogmatic attachment towards religious beliefs, I'd say possibly that they could get jhanas, very deep samadhi based on loving kindness, and maybe reborn in divine abodes. Probably they get different section in the Brahma world from where the Buddhas are reborn, maybe. I don't know, perhaps they're reborn in the same neighborhood, but go to different churches there, to different temples there. I don't know what it's like. But as far as gaining the wisdom, reaching the wisdom of non-self and gaining stages of awakening or liberation, I'd say that that is not possible, because I say that the wisdom of anatta, of non-self, is the special a teaching special to the enlightened ones. That is a teaching that only the Buddhas discover in its fullness and its depth. And so that is the teaching that cuts through the bonds and fetters and brings liberation.
Translation. I think metta practice is not something like fantasy or the best antidote for fear is metta.
Yeah.
The root of fear is dosa, is ill will, anger. And this is just theory until you truly live by yourself in a cottage in the forest or by yourself in a big house in a dark place.
Yeah.
Then you experience the power of metta.
Yeah.
Metta is a power to be reckoned with.
Yeah.
It's not just theory, it's not just a thought.
Yeah.
It is something that really works and gives results and makes it happen.
Yeah.
No, I mean,
I don't think so.
No,
I don't think you could. I don't think you could hypnotize a person that they won't have any fear.
It comes down to my opinion, with my experience. Okay, am I a loving person, or am I just fantasizing? I'd rather believe I'm a loving person than I'm dealing with metta with love. Then, you know, rather believe that I'm just fantasizing.
No.
So, hey, who knows? But I don't fantasize.
Okay. I just want to close with one comment that Sukhavati's statement reminded me of. Maybe this will encourage you to learn the Metta Sutta. There's an old German monk in Sri Lanka. I believe he's still alive. He must be in his mid-90s now. He had become a monk there about the early 1950s, I think 1952. He lived in one hermitage, the island hermitage, for 12 years. He never left the island till 1964. And when he left the island hermitage from 1964 to 1987, he always wandered around, never staying in one fixed place until he could no longer wander, till he reached the age of about 82. And he had some leg problems, so he could not wander anymore. And I heard one time he was staying in a cave, and he did a lot of practice of loving kindness meditation. He was staying in a cave, and then a bear came in and was coming straight towards him. And he didn't know what to do. What do you do when a bear comes straight towards you? And so he started to recite the Metta Sutta. The bear stopped, turned around, and walked out of the cave. Okay, thank you for listening. We share the merits. Akasata chabhumata deva naga mahitika punyantang anumotipa chirang rakantu sasanam. Akasata chabhumata deva naga mahitika punyantang anumodipa chirang rakantu desanam. Akasata chabhumata deva naga mahitika punyantang anumodipa chirang rakantu mangparang. Etavata cha amhehi sampadang punya sampadam sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhya etavata cha amhehi sampadam punya sampadam Sabbe bhuta numodantu sabba sampati siddhya etavata caam hehi sampadam punya sampadam sabbe sata numodantu sabba sampati siddhya.